Welcome, everyone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, come on. You can do better than that. For those of you who was here last night, you know we're not going to get started until I get a rousing good morning.
Good morning.
And this is just a public service announcement. In Jamaica, where I'm from, there's a saying, small up yourself. There's a lot of people that are trying to get in. So if there's a little seat that you have, like, four seats next to you, and you're like, sitting on the end like I like to do, because you want to run out quick, just sort of kind of small up yourself and so that we can accommodate everyone, please. Thank you. Well, welcome, everyone. I am Jackie Glenn, Vice President of Diversity and Inclusion at Dell. Some of you might remember I used to be the EMC Chief Diversity Officer, but we just got bought, which is a great thing. And so now we are Dell Technology, or Dell. So we are excited to be here once again, and I will be your MC for this session. As a global company, Dell fully understands the business necessity of supporting women's leadership as a vital part of our business, sustainability, and our company marketplace leadership. Mass Conference for Women offers a blend of practical tools and advice, inspiration, and peer networking. With a mix of this session, it is committed to your empowerment, to inspire you, to make your mark and in your company and in your personal life. That's why Dell is proud to be a partner of this conference and thrilled to be here supporting the advancements of women leaders across the state. Thank you for participating in this breakout session. Listen to the title. How to Overcome Imposter Syndrome to Become the Authentic Leader You Envision. Isn't that wonderful? That's why this is like a main audience. I walked in there today and I'm like, is this like a breakout session or what? So welcome. We have an amazing hour in store for you. Now, I'm excited to introduce to you Leslie Jane Seymour, media entrepreneur and... Yes, let's give it up for Leslie. And one of the industry most respected editorial leaders. She is the creator of an online club called Kindred, a community of women who are lifelong learners, who wants the tools, connection, and inspiration to make the most of their adult lives. She was named editor-in-chief for More Magazine, the leading lifestyle magazine for women over 40, with a readership of 1.5 million. And was also the editor-in-chief and social media director of More.com, which attracts over 12 million monthly page view and 600,000 unique visitors. In July of 2015, Leslie created history by having the First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama, guest edit the entire issue, leading to 8.5 billion media impressions worldwide.
Ooh-hoo.
That deserves a round of applause. In 2008, Seymour led More to its first National Magazine Award nomination in the area of personal service. The magazine was also nominated for General Excellence in 2009 and in 2012, and won the Meredith Creative Excellence Awards in 2008, 2009, 2010. In 2012, Seymour was named Executive Director of Meredith Beauty Center of Excellence. And in 2009, she was named number 4 on the 2009 Most Powerful Fashion Editor list by Forbes magazine. Look at her shoes. Please join me in welcoming to the stage Leslie.
All right.
Come on, woo-hoo! Give it up for Leslie.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Jackie. So sweet. Oh. All right. I was worried I was going to be the whole discussion here for a minute. Anyway, thank you all for being here. We're really excited. I have incredible panelists here. We're going to start by having them go around and just briefly introduce themselves and give a little bit of their background. Why don't we start with Nina?
Sure. My name is Nina Tassler. I am the currently an advisor and former chairman of entertainment, of CBS Entertainment. I held that post since 2004. Prior to that, I was the president of CBS. Before that, I ran drama development at CBS. Before that, I was the executive vice president of drama development at Warner Brothers Studios. While at CBS, I developed shows CSI, NCIS, The Big Bang Theory, The Good Wife.
Felicia! Good.
And a little secret, there's a sequel coming to CBS All Access.
Oh,
so, and then while at Warner Brothers, I was one of several people involved in developing ER, which was an extraordinary experience.
Yeah.
Prior to that, I was a talent agent at one of the four largest theatrical agencies in Hollywood. Before that, I was a receptionist.
Hey!
And before that, I was an actress, so that's where I started, and I am so honored to be here today. Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. Hannah?
Sure, Hannah Grove. I'm a CMO for State Street, which, spoiler alert, does not stand for Chief Medical Officer. I am a Chief Marketing Officer, which means, I think, like Nina, I'm responsible for producing a lot of dramas. like Nina, I actually started out my career as an actress, but that was a very brief blip before I moved speedily into my second career as a waitress, where I lasted a lot longer. I'm a very proud mother of an 18-year-old, and I'm even prouder to be here with more than 1,500 incredible State Street women today. So who's running State Street?
Hi, and I am Carla Harris. I am a vice chairman at Morgan Stanley and managing director. I'm also a gospel recording artist. I've done 3 CDs and 5 sold-out concerts at Carnegie Hall. I'm also the author of 2 books, Expect to Win and Strategize to Win. I'll be signing the books right after this, so meet me in the hall. I'm also the chair of the National Women's Business Council, appointed by President Obama in 2013. And so the council is responsible for giving advice. I call it a consultative body to the White House, the Congress, and also to the Small Business Administration on all things as they relate to women entrepreneurs and women leaders. And I'm also the proud mother of a 17-month-old.
And as I said
to a few of my colleagues this morning, I fought for a lot of titles in my life, but that's the best one yet.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes, incredible. All right, I just realized we have to change the title of this thing. It can't be the imposter syndrome. It doesn't make any sense starting with these guys and those incredible titles. Thank you. And that's absolutely, absolutely amazing, Carla. Hardest job you will ever have, I will tell you. Okay, so executive vice president, vice chairman, president. Okay, these are all titles that all 3 of you or more have held or have at some of the most respected businesses in America: State Street, Morgan Stanley, CBS Entertainment. They are not the titles of women trying to make it, obviously, right? They are the titles of women who have proven themselves as successful leaders. But I want you to let us 2,000 women in on a small secret. Has there ever been a time when you felt like a fraud, or imagine that other people thought you were more capable than you really were? Who wants to jump in there?
Well, you know, I'll just start by saying that I have wrestled with that most of my adult life.
Wow.
I think part of it comes from the fact that where I set out, where I started in life, I dreamed of being an actress. I went to Boston University right here in town, studied, go Terriers. And that was my goal. That was my dream. That was my ambition. And so I was able to create characters. I was able to create personas for myself. And that's what I hid behind. But that's what I was trained to do. Mm. And then all of a sudden, I had to step out from behind that mask, and I had to be myself. And that's something... Josh?
Help. Okay. Oops. Ouch. Got it?
I think okay. We're good. Or not.
Is there somebody with sound?
Yeah, he's on the board.
Oh, good. There you are. Okay.
You know, I'm a singer. I'm always looking for the sound man.
Okay. Okay. Cool.
So I think the challenge was learning to be myself. And to that end, learning to be myself, not only have a voice, but have an opinion and learn a business. I do not have a business background. I can sing, I can dance, I can do Shakespeare, but I did not have a business background. But I knew that I loved television, I knew that I loved actors, I loved the business, so I really had to train myself. There was no degree in agenting, there was no degree in development, there was no course of study in how to run a television studio, there was no program to learn how to be a network president, and I had to teach myself, and I had to take ownership of that learning curve, and I had to realize that I was going to walk in my own shoes. There were very few women in my business, and there were very few. I'm one of three presidents of network television in the history of network television.
Wow!
So I had no one to learn from, and I had to learn from myself. So there was always that sense of, can I trust myself? Can I trust my instincts? Am I deserving? Am I responsible? I still wrestle with that, but again, with success comes confidence, but there still is that little narrative back there that plays itself on a loop in the back of my head, and constantly there's that mantra to say, stop the tape. Don't let it play. I don't want to hear it anymore. So that's sort of my experience.
Either of you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a sort of 10-year stretch in my life where people definitely added points to my IQ because of my British accent. And you know, I definitely, what Nina said about that talk tape in your head, I actually think that one of the sort of biggest contributors to the sort of so-called imposter syndrome is the voice in your head that is telling you can't do something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have an unusual background, acting like Nina, then, you know, straight shot into waitressing. I didn't graduate high school. I didn't get to go to university because I had to look after my family. And so many people told me there is no way you'll be able to break into your field because you don't have the qualifications. And I think it's very easy. You can be very susceptible to respond to that and what you have to do. And I think mantra is a really perfect word because you absolutely have to change that talk tape and say, I can absolutely do it. And it's about looking with those eyes forward with confidence. And I always tell people who say, well, I'm not very confident and I don't think I can do that. Confidence is a muscle. I mean, how many of us get up every morning or an evening and go to the gym to exercise, right? Tons of us. Well, you've got to apply that same maxim to practicing to be confident. And that, I think, is a big piece of it.
Okay.
And I'll say that I did not have the crisis of feeling like I was an imposter. I always had the confidence that I could do it. And my parents and my grandmother, my paternal grandmother in particular, always made me feel like I was supposed to do well, that I had the goods. But what I was vulnerable to was people coming up to question it and making me think, which is why I made this comment that I made this morning, don't give away your power. So often when people start to question, and how did you get here, and should you really be here, that resolve that you had walking in, it starts to get impaired. Right. So that's when I started to realize that. And someone told me this very early on in my career. Nobody can make you feel inferior without your permission.
That's exactly right.
Right. So you gave it away. You let them do that. So once I started realizing what was happening, then I put a stop to it to say, OK, I see what's happening. They're trying to make me doubt myself. And then the other thing that I started to realize is that when people expend the effort to try to make you feel less than, that means you're really good.
Right. Oh, because they're working on it.
Because they wouldn't bother.
Right. They wouldn't bother.
They see the competition. They see you as a threat. They're looking at you saying, uh-oh, right? And so now they're trying to expend some energy to, you know, to do this to you, to keep you out or to stop you or to make you doubt. So when I saw that, I would get even extra confidence. I say, uh-huh, y'all see me coming. All right. So
you said something, Carlos said something early this morning that I just thought was so fantastic. It's like when you get the power, you give it away.
Absolutely.
And I had a boss, and the words that he gave me are so valuable and so liberating. And they were, there's no limit to what a person can do if they don't mind who gets the credit.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, when you let that go and you don't worry about being, you know, me, I did it. All of a sudden, you realize you have an army of people with whom you work, and there's your power, there's your strength.
And they're supporting you.
And they're supporting you.
Right. And that's why I talked about execution to empowerment.
It was
because
great.
So often we are absolutely outstanding individual contributors.
Yeah.
And when we get a promotion or we get the power, we want to hold on to that thing that we were doing and take on the new responsibility and the new responsibility and the new responsibility until we're drowning.
Right.
And many times we can't then outperform
right.
when, in fact, what you're supposed to do is let that thing go.
Right.
Give it to somebody else so that they can shine. And now, guess what? You have somebody that is beholden to you,
right.
somebody who will have your back. And then you can move forward because you cannot get to second base with your foot still on first.
Right.
You got to let it go.
That's right.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I always ran a team like that, and they would do those 360-degree, you know, things and stick you on a grid, and they would come up to me. I ran Mary Claire USA at that point, and they would say, all the other editors are in this quadrant. You're in this quadrant. You're not taking credit for everything. They're all in this authoritarian area, and they're going, you know, you're not going to make it here. And I was like, well, they said, are you doing this on purpose? And I said, yes, because I like to run a team. That's the whole idea. I can't take all the credit for everything. 32 heads are better than one. And they were like, okay, if you're willing to, you know, if you're doing it on purpose, it's okay. So it's a very different kind of thing. Like, who would think of not running a team? I had people come to work with me at four different magazines for that reason. They would follow me. It's exactly what you
said. And hire people that are better than you.
Yes.
Always.
That is like number one secret to success.
Hello? Shine the light on the other people,
right? Yeah.
So let's talk about imposter syndrome is a name. And it does happen mostly among of high-achieving women. So why do you think that is? Do you think, I mean, I have to say, I've worked with a lot of men who knew 1/8 of what I knew, and they had no imposter syndrome. Yeah. So
they don't admit to it.
Right.
Do you think they do, and we just are more honest about it, and we admit to it? What do you guys think?
I think it goes down to something that Carla touched on, in that I think there's two factors. One, we don't say no enough. And we don't necessarily have the confidence to say no, which means the pylon happens, the burnout happens. It's a domino effect.
Yes.
And then I think the second thing that we do, which starts early on in career, that women are particularly susceptible to, is honestly, I would not have 300 pairs of shoes. I would have 600 pairs of shoes if I got a dollar for every time a woman prefaced a contribution at a meeting by saying, this may be a stupid question. I mean, how many times do you hear women do that?
Yeah, we take ourselves down before we even step up.
Right. We start to sort of put it in the vernacular and put it in the vocabulary. And then it marks us right the way. I've never heard a man say that. And I think we have to be very, very careful and very intentional from the moment our careers begin about what we say. I always tell women as well, don't go to a meeting if you don't have a contribution or if you don't have a speaking role. You're not the person with the notebook. And, you know, I used to toddle around with my notebook and pen. No, guess what? Because very few men show up with a notebook. So I think those little sort of small things that really matter.
You're shaking your head.
Well, I'm saying only because there's a saying, you know, working in Hollywood where, you know, information is power. And what would happen is, you know, you'd make part of your job getting the goods on who's doing what, who's got a gig, who's got a show about to pitch, and I would never walk into a meeting without having, and forgive me for saying this, a good piece of gossip. I mean, there was always, you know, there was always something going on somewhere. And nine times out of ten, there was a there is a community of women in Hollywood, and we talk, and we share, and we take care of each other, and we watch each other's backs. But you would walk in, and you knew you had the knowledge, you had the information, you had the goods. And you controlled that meeting based on when and where and how you shared the information that you had that only you had privy to because you had that secret society.
Yeah, and then you had currency. Your currency,
currency
was the gossip.
Was your
but to your point about the meeting, you know, I tell people don't be intimidated and not go to the meeting because you don't feel like you have something. Because the problem with us is that we will devalue that
Absolutely.
Which we have to contribute. So we'll say, well, I can't say that because Peter just said that. And I can't say that because Sam just said that. So even though they might have had something, they think now they can't say anything because it was said. So what I say is if you go to the meeting, don't go into the meeting and not say something.
And if you run
out of things to say, then when all else fails, do like the boys do. Just repeat what somebody
yes.
else said.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Move a comma, change a preposition, but say it, right?
And don't give credit to the person who said it.
Absolutely.
You don't say, just as Carla said.
That's right. They do it.
You pretend like it was your brilliant idea.
Yes, ma'am. They say it all the time.
And 2 minutes ago.
And women ask me, well, suppose I say something and then nobody makes a comment. And then Peter comes right behind me and he says the same thing. I said, then your response should be, Peter, thank you so much for supporting my point. I appreciate that.
Right? Exactly. It is such a classic man thing to do. And they usually will steal the woman's
Absolutely.
Comment.
Totally. Always.
And the men listen to it. It's so classic.
Mansplaining.
It's so crazy.
I literally once had a former boss say to me, and I thought he was joking. And so I started to laugh after he said it. But he said, look, here's the way it is. He said, I just have to take credit for your successes, and you have to take the hits for your failures. And I thought, literally my first reaction was like,
was he a politician?
No, he was not.
All right. Just wondering.
Could be. But you know, I heard those words, and I was so offended, and I was shocked. First I started to laugh, and I realized, no, he's dead serious.
How outrageous.
Dead serious. Outrageous.
Can I ask a particular question just because we were talking in front here. We were talking about high heels and everything. And you mentioned you're under 5 feet tall.
Yes, I am.
How does that affect, because you're tall. I'm short, but not
I'm
as short
flats.
As you.
Yeah.
And she's in flats. Women, you know, I mean, honestly, with meetings that I've gone to with men, I have put on my highest, I've been advised, put on your highest spike heels and you toddle in there no matter what you do. Because if you're small, they are less intimidated. Is that true with you? What did you do?
I have to tell
platforms.
You. Well, I wore heels for many years. I'm a little bit of a klutz, so it was very hard for me. But I will tell you something interesting. So much of our business is conducted over the telephone. Obviously, there's email stuff, but I like to talk to people. I like to look at people in the face. And I think our fallback has been to communicate too much via email, to communicate too much via social media. I don't think there's anything as gripping and compelling and as convincing as getting somebody in the room. But, you know, our business is, you know, LA is a very big spread out community. And so I had to do a lot of business over the phone. So if I had met somebody and they met me for the first time, I cannot tell you the number of times people would say, you sound so much taller on the phone.
Aha. That's funny.
How is that possible?
Okay.
So, but you know what? I've come to accept it. Like I said, not being 5 feet tall, it's just who I am.
But when you would go into meetings, you had a...
Oh, absolutely. You know what? I've come to terms with it.
Okay.
But I had a lot of crooked neck problems, but just the way it was.
Okay. Cool. All right. So let's talk about exhaustion and burnout that can happen because of the imposter syndrome, because you take on too much, you doubt yourself, so you keep doing 2 and 3 times the work that everybody else does. Has anybody experienced that? And what do you do when you do experience it, and how do you get out of it?
Absolutely experienced it. I think it's absolute par for the course, because I think you know, one of the ways that you can advance, and I think the primary driver I've used in my career, is to take on new things as a way of learning. So often we take on too many things because we have an appetite to learn,
And honestly, the biggest lesson that I had to learn, and back to my muscle comment, it's a muscle that I'm still developing, is learning to say no. And there's a sort of caveat to that, and that is that I used to say no, but I'd say no, and then I'd get into these convoluted explanations for why, and almost sort of justifying it. And that's actually as exhausting as taking something on. And what I've learned to do now is just say no, I can't. And I'm not gonna sort of provide you with
no explanation
a rationale.
Needed. Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I think you have to own that space. I think that's tremendously important. Because otherwise, particularly as you progress in your career, and you know, I know all of you will share this, you get asked to do so many things, and so many things that you're interested in and engaged
mm-hmm.
by,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden you're just consumed.
Right. And, Carla?
Yeah, and that's the only thing that I repeat in both of my books, Expect to Win and Strategize to Win, is this concept of having an agenda.
Yeah.
That's why it's so important to have an agenda, because then you know why you are doing what you are doing, why you're in the seat that you're in, what kind of skills you want to get, experiences you want to get, people you want to meet, why you're in the house, why you're in that company. So when those opportunities come, then you have something where you can evaluate whether or not this makes sense for you to take on. Because if you don't, you will run into the burnout. And the two things that I think plague women and that really inhibit us from being able to ascend to where we should be or could be is fear and fatigue.
Yeah.
Those two things.
Okay.
And fear early on in your career, but fatigue as you get more seasoned. So if you keep taking on those things, you will get tired. And I've seen so many women who are right there about to break through the ceiling and they say, you know what, I'm tired.
Right.
And
right.
they don't because right. they perceive that it's going to take all of this energy. They will have to exert all of this energy that they just don't have anymore. So when you're feeling tired, you have to take a break. You have to step away. I certainly felt myself on that journey because I'm an executor at heart. And then all of a sudden, I'm in the space where I need to create.
Right.
And when you execute, you have a lot of capacity. You can just keep piling it on. And I'm a really good executor. And then all of a sudden, I said, but wait a minute. If I'm filling up the calendar, executing, where do I create?
Yeah, you can.
Where's the
right.
white space?
Right.
So I had to be disciplined and put white space in the calendar, since I'm a calendar girl, and say for 2 hours, I'm not executing, I'm not talking, I'm creating. And if nothing comes, well, that's what I did in those 2 hours. It was a space. But I gotta put it in there, because otherwise there's no time to think and really innovate. And we're all competing in some way around innovation.
Well, what's really interesting is I did suffer burnout. I did suffer after 30 years in the entertainment business.
That'll do it.
And and you have a lot of needy people and a lot of people who literally, they don't go off the clock. I mean, it's 24/7. When they need you now. And everything is a life crisis. But I will tell you, when I stepped down, when I stepped away from my job, I did it on my own terms. And I did it after I achieved the title I wanted. I had transformed the entire landscape of the network from daytime programming, primetime programming, late night programming, our summer strategy. I had accomplished everything I had wanted to accomplish, and I wanted to close that chapter and open a new one. And I cannot tell you the number of people who called me to say, "Are you crazy? How can you possibly do this?" And I said, "You know what? If I'm going to start a new chapter, I have to finish this one, and it's finished. There's nothing more to do." And the two things that I took away from that were I have my skills. They are portable.
That's right.
And they are adaptable. Wherever I go, they come with me.
That's right.
And that allowed me to start a new chapter in my life.
I think women often, I don't know how you guys feel, but I think we often think that the skills and the accomplishments belong to the place we were at.
Absolutely.
And we don't realize that all of that goes in your back pocket. Yeah. I remember when I was thinking of leaving Vogue, I was there for 9 years as a writer and an editor. And I remember there are people there now, 30 years later, who were there when I was in my 20s. And they couldn't leave. They were terrified of leaving. And I was going to leave, and I had a great therapist who said, you know what, you take those with you. That goes
right.
in your back pocket. That's part of your history. You can talk about it, all those skills. But we are afraid to leave because we think they don't come with us. Do you guys have that feeling at all?
I think it's, I mean, you know, I talk a lot about the fact that I think too often, particularly as you ascend the corporate ladder, you tend to wrap up your identity with the title. And, you know, the trappings become very sybaritic. I mean, it's all of a sudden you think you're a legend in your own lunchtime. And, right. You know, it's a sort of fabulous thing. And you've really, really got to check yourself. And I always say to people, we are not one-dimensional. We're three or four or five-dimensional. And you need to have as much identity invested in your passions, your beliefs, and your family, because unequivocally, the cylinders will not all be firing at the same rate at the same time. And what you need to be able to do is when work isn't going well, you've got to have the other things in your life buoying you and vice versa.
That's right.
But if you get sort of sucked into this, hello, I'm an executive vice president. It's not imposter syndrome, it's poser syndrome.
Yeah, right.
And it's going to make you very unhappy. I had this sort of wake up call. I went to pick up my daughter from elementary school and I sort of sashayed in with my briefcase and my heels thinking, I am hashtag fabulous. You know, make way.
You've made it.
I've made it. It was a real, I've made it moment. And the woman at the desk said, I'm going to need to see an ID. And I was like, I beg your pardon. Well, they had never seen me because I had never been there to pick up my daughter. And that was a terrible wake-up call for me. And I realized that I had to invest a lot more in that. And so it's just finding those right balances and not taking yourself too seriously.
Yeah.
It's a real slippery slope.
So let's talk a little bit about the idea of how do you overcome the self-doubt and fear. So Carla, you talk about growing up in a no-nonsense, no-excuses household where your parents expected you to be outstanding. Mm-hmm. Suggest that what we need to do is simply own and honor our abilities and ambitions and get on with it. Mm-hmm. What if you didn't have a family like that? How can you incorporate that from friends? Do I come hang out with you? Do I read the book? Does that incorporate it? What if my parents weren't those kinds of parents?
And yes.
I wasn't that lucky.
Yes. Well, you pull your inspiration from the people who are around you because there's going to be somebody in your life that's going to continue to encourage you and tell you that you can do it. And sometimes it's the people that are following you. Sometimes it's somebody that's looking up to you saying, hey, you're so great, or you're my inspiration, or I believe in you. And it could be, as I said, somebody who's junior. Wherever you get it from, take that fuel and use it. It'd be nice if it's your parents, but sometimes it's not. I shared that with a couple of the colleagues in the audience that I had friends that I grew up with whose parents weren't as supportive. And even, you know, at 10 or 11 years old, I remember thinking, I don't think your mama telling you the right thing. Because they were saying things like, oh, well, you can't do this, you can't do that. And sometimes, unfortunately, your parents are the victims of wherever they came from. But don't use that as your excuse. Pull that inspiration from other people. The other thing I say is get really good at giving yourself the attagirl.
Absolutely.
You know, you're going to be in environments, especially highly dynamic, competitive, male-oriented environments, where the boys aren't always going to tell you that you did a good job.
That's right.
Right? You have to know that you know that you know that you did a great job. And you got to get really good at saying, go ahead, girl, way to go. Right? I had lots of those moments. But it empowered me even more because I said, you know, I know the fact that I'm still here throughout all of the economic cycles that happens on Wall Street, that I'm here because I'm that good. So even when they don't give me that credit, you say, way to go, girl. Good job. And even now on the golf course, when I'm playing with the boys and I hit it out, you know, I drive them and they don't say anything, I'll say loudly, good drive, Carla. Way to go, girl. Right?
All right, we're all getting her phone number and we're going to call her. I'm going to give out her phone number at the end so that we can all call her when we need that kind of help. Okay, a wonderful new book was published this year called What I Told My Daughter. Congratulations, Nina.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Please tell us about it and what, as a mother, made you write it.
Well, I have to tell you something. I needed it. I am a mother of two kids. I have a 28-year-old son. I have an 18-year-old daughter. When my son was 7, before my daughter was born, I was driving him to school. And he said to me, because that's one thing I tried to do every single day was drive my son to school. And he said to me, you know, Mom, boys are better than girls. So.
I'll show you. I'll have one.
I pulled the car over. I turned the engine off. And I said, let me just tell you something, son. Boys and girls are different. Their bodies are different. But they're equal. I know that's a tough concept to get, but they're equal. They have the same dreams, the same ambitions. And I don't know if you remember that old Memorex ad where, like, the person was, you know, blown back in the chair. That poor kid, I think his face, he lost all color in his face, but he is the biggest feminist I know to this day. And, but I can tell you, I was raised by a Puerto Rican mother and a Jewish father. They were very active in the civil rights movement. I was marching and protesting the war against Vietnam before I was really fully aware of what was going on. When I was growing up, there was a women's movement. I used to say all you had to do was step off the bank and you were swept up in the current. And then what happened is we got older and people thought, hey, we're good. We're done. You know, in 1972, when I was in college, all of a sudden I realized, wait a minute, the ERA is, we were ratified 32 states. And then thank you, Phyllis Schlafly, and it was all over with. But I'll just tell you quickly, it was looking around and realizing that there wasn't a movement. And I had a daughter, and I was bringing her up in this world and realizing, especially in the media, she was being bombarded by negative images.
Yes.
Terrible, body images and the language and the way young girls were being treated. I said, I need help. I need help. But I need help from many different women, many different voices, because no one's living my life. Mm-hmm. We're all living different lives. We all have different experiences. So literally, I went to the bookstore and I said, there's got to be a book somewhere that's going to tell me what to do. I need to raise a feminist. I'm a feminist. Where do I find that? And I realized there wasn't one. And then I just said, well, if there's not one, I'm just going to do it. And I reached out to people across, women across every spectrum, everybody from Ruth Bader Ginsburg to Nancy Pelosi to Laura Bush to Anwar Sadat's widow to entertainers to same-sex moms to stepmoms, and realized that everybody has a story to tell. And everybody's story is about resilience, and it's about gender equality. And it's their personal stories and their intimate stories, and I find that I learn much better when someone shares their personal family story with me. And that was how we collected the essays. They're 54 amazing stories, heartwarming. They're not, it's not preachy and not how-to. They're heartwarming stories.
Interesting. Okay. So I'm going to divert just a bit because we're talking about that here. Do you feel like we all felt like maybe, a lot of the women's movement had been covered and this next generation was very complacent about it. Do you think there's a new rushing sense of water that's coming?
Oh, bring it.
Because of
bring
where
it.
We are?
Here's the rushing here's water the rushing right here. Water. There it is. Every one of you
yeah.
are part
okay.
of that rushing water.
Do you all feel that way? Is there something coming? I mean, as long as we're up here and we're talking to women like this about business and everything, do you feel like there's a new mantra or a new outlook or something that women are going to have to gird themselves for going forward into 2017 for the next few years in terms of women's issues and women in business?
Women and mothers make change happen, period. That's it. And whether or not you are political, every single person in this room is an activist. Every person in this world can make change. And you can do it simple and at home. You can do it as part of a group. I like to say that I practice one of three things every day. And that is I forward an informational email to a different cohort. I can sign a petition. And it doesn't have to be political. It can be social. It can be environmental. It can be cultural. And I can, lastly, I can donate money. It can be $50, it could be $5,000, and it could be something that I believe in. And fourth, and this is really important, support your print journalists.
Yes.
They need our help right now.
Yes, yes.
So, get a newspaper or magazine subscription. Keep your online, keep your digital tablet, do all of that, but support your local journalists. It's very, very important. But those are things we can do. But women do make change, period.
I think if I could add a fifth thing to your list, because I agree with every one of them, I think the other thing that I think we all have to do is be a lot kinder.
I think there's just such negative rhetoric. And I think the impact that it has on our psyche is extraordinary. Oh, and, you know, we can all play a role. We can absolutely change that. And, you know, I always say to my daughter, be kind, because you never, ever know what the other person is going through. And if they're the nastiest people in the world, that's actually double the reason to be kind. And I think if we can just sort of spread that, I think it could change how we feel dramatically.
And the thing that I'll add is I think that we have to exercise our voice. Okay. Too often people don't speak when they have something to say.
Yes.
And they need to speak, because we can educate each other. We can support each other. I think that this whole election cycle, I think, has underscored the fact that we have to be active and stand up and be heard. Because either you lead, as the old saying says, you lead, follow, or get out of the way, right? And you get what you deserve if you don't speak, right? So it's important that I think women understand that we are no longer the minority in this country. We are the majority. We are 51%. So don't allow anybody to make you feel small or less than. Exercise your voice. Say, no, wait a minute, stop. This doesn't work for me, right? Or I want this, I deserve that, but you must speak.
Good. Let's talk about a word that's really important going forward for everybody: authenticity. How do you bring that? That is one of the things that I think holds a lot of women back in business, is they think, I've got to be the same person here that I am at home with my kids and that I am with my parents and blah, blah, blah. Can you still be authentic? I struggled with that for so many years. Can you still be your authentic self and still bring in protection, bring in all different kinds of things into work, and still be who you are, you know, without feeling like you're somebody else at work? And how do you bring authenticity to the work, to the workplace?
I would argue very strongly that if you're not authentic, you absolutely won't succeed, because at some point it's going to catch up with you. And the one thing I always say to people is, you know, we've all done that, right? We've all been lured into the cosmetic counter, who've offered us a makeover, and then we emerge into daylight and we look like we're in a Halloween costume.
Yes.
Certainly I have. And that, I extrapolate that to when you're pretending to be someone that you're not. It is exhausting. It comes with practice. I think it comes with confidence. But I encourage everyone, authenticity is not something you achieve. It's something that you are. And the person that you are inside is the most valuable piece to bring to work. And that means bring all of you to work and show all the colored feathers. There's nothing to be afraid of.
I love this topic. This is my favorite topic. It is chapter one in Expect to Win.
Okay.
I had so many people ask me, how can I bring my real self to the table? And to your point, and I said earlier this morning, it is your competitive advantage.
Totally.
Because nobody can be you the way that you can be you. But the key to bringing all of who you are to work and your authentic self is to know who you are. So you have to start with spending some quiet time saying, who am I? What kind of friend am I? What kind of significant other am I? What kind of student am I? What kind of professional am I? What do I like about who I am? What would I like to change? What would I like to emulate and actually bring in what she does into who I am and the way that I do it? So first, figure out who you are. Second of all, understand that we're all multifaceted, to your earlier point. There's not just one you. There is a kind you. There is an angry you. There is, you know, whatever. But understand who you are, and then you can be free to bring all of those people to whatever situation, and then free to meet people where they are. I say to people all the time, sometimes I do business in the South. I know those boys cannot take full frontal Carla.
Yeah.
So sometimes they get Carla Light. But they are, Carla Light is just as much a part of who Carla is.
You still feel that's authentic?
Absolutely.
That's moderated.
Absolutely, because that's all of who you are.
Okay. Now you're audience.
Every one of us, I mean, we are so hyphenated anyway. Yeah. We're working moms, tiger moms, soccer moms, snack moms, stay-at-home mom. That, you know, we're all of that. And that doesn't separate us. That brings us together as a community. We can be all of those things and still be ourselves.
Awesome. On that note, okay, we're going to bring the most authentic voice we've got right here to monitor the questions.
Let's give them a round of applause, and we're going to
awesome.
Thank you so much.
I have to get to Carla.
We're going to spend some time taking a few questions.
Carla.
We could go on all day, but you know we can't do that. But we do want to make sure that we give the audience a chance to ask a few questions. But before you do that, I've got a few of my own. The most immediate questions that comes to mind, and I know that you said, a lot of you, that you might not suffer at this point in your career from the imposter syndrome, but we have a lot of young women and a few good men in the audience that are young in their careers and maybe suffering from that. And I know for myself, when I first came to this country, I was really trying to erase my accent.
Oh.
And it's a differentiating factor for me now.
Yeah,
so now when
yes,
I get on the stage, I just really bring it on. And I said, I hail from the sunny island of Jamaica. So don't ask me where my accent's in from, because I already told you. And so how do you make the imposter syndrome stop? And do you guys think of when you can turn it on and turn it off? How do you stop it? So if someone is in air and feel like they're doing it all the time, how do you explain to them, how do they stop that?
Yes, I'll be happy to start there. First of all, look at your own data. You have a series of firsts and successful firsts. So if you're ever starting to doubt whether or not you should be there, understand that, again, these folks who chose you to be in that seat, who hired you for that job, that appointed you to that position, they did that because they thought you could make rain. They see you. They see your what you can bring to the table. So don't doubt that. That's the first thing. The second thing is look at all the things that you've done successfully before. And remind yourself that if you did it before, you'll be able to do it again.
Absolutely.
So no reason to worry about that. Lastly, if you fail, so what? You've learned something from that experience. Every experience comes to bring you one or two things, the blessing or the lesson. Either you get that thing you were trying to get, or now you understand how to do it differently. Both are valuable. So no matter what, you have no downside. Don't doubt that moment why you got that seat and that opportunity. Put your foot on the gas and go.
Right.
All right. Can I add one thing to that? Just, I would say, if you need help, reach out.
For it, yeah.
There are coaches. There are therapists. There are all kinds of people like that. I want us to get past that stigma.
Absolutely.
That everybody should do this on their own somehow and go through all the... It's not so easy sometimes. And to figure out what your issues are. Because I'll tell you, it's really powerful when you know your issues and you're managing someone. I manage a lot of creative people. And they start going wackadoodle on you in a meeting. And then you go back there and go, hey, what was that all about? And they start laying all this crap on you, and you've done all your personal work, and you can go, you know what? Those aren't my issues. You're bringing that in. You need to figure out where you're getting that from. That's your baggage, not mine. That's not what I've been pushing on you. So you can very quickly get help with that.
Absolutely.
Don't think you have to sit in your own room by yourself and figure it out.
Thank you. So I want you to start walking to the mic, because I want to make sure that we use the time effectively. And let me just put some parameters around the question asking. I'm bringing on my boss itself, Carla. ask a question, please. Don't go on a dissertation, because we only have a little bit of time.
Right.
I have one more question. I'm just going to get to the point. What about fake it until you can make it?
I was just
speak to that. Speak to that.
Anyone?
Well, you go.
Well, both of us having been actors.
Yeah.
Hey, if it works, run with it, you know? I mean, it's there were plenty of times I walked, and the irony is, I'm not a suit person, I'm not a dress person, I'm a sweatpant person, and it was very hard for me to sort of, and jeans, I mean, sweatpants, jeans, I'm much more comfortable, and you know what? When I had to go into my corporate meetings, and I had to do my presentations at Carnegie Hall, and I had to do blah, 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 I had to fake it. It's not what I'm comfortable in. It's not who I am. But you know what? That was the uniform. That was the suit I had to wear. So that was a part of it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think the one thing I would add is, you know, and I think Carla's already touched on this, but ask questions while you're faking it. I mean, have your game face on. I mean, honestly, if my math teachers knew that I was in finance today, they would drop into a dead swoon. And, you know, But thank God for Google and, you know, balance sheet for dummies. And I'm not embarrassed to admit that I had to look up ROE the first time I heard it. No biggie.
Right.
You know, but it's just like, be a friend. And, you know, Leslie Ann said it perfectly as well. You have to be willing to ask for help. It's okay.
And you know what? One last thing. I got great power in saying, I don't know the answer to that.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
when people would ask a question and they'd ask me, I'm like, I don't know the answer to that question. But I will find out.
Right. Dr. Google is a big help.
Yeah.
Totally. All right, we have a line.
Okay.
Hello, thank you for sharing with us today. It's been great. My name is Regina Holmes. I'm from Boston Scientific. I had a question about something that was said earlier, and you talked about people expending effort to keep you out, and that's when you know when you're good. And so my question is, how do you work through that? What are some things that you can do to try to navigate those difficult situations? Mm-hmm.
If you feel like you are being impeded by one person, ask yourself whether or not you have invested enough in the other relationships. Because there should never be one person that stands in your way or that drives you out of an organization. So if you're feeling constrained, that means you probably haven't invested enough in other relationships. So you should start investing in other relationships. So if nothing else, if that person is saying bad things about you, you make them the outlier. Because everybody else is saying, oh, she's fabulous. Oh, she's great. Because you've built these other relationships. That's strategy number one. Strategy number two is to take that person in a conference room, right?
Beat them up.
Uh-oh. And let's call him. Well, no, you'll see. It's not that bad. So, and let's call this person Bob and say, here's your script. Bob.
Or Donald.
Stop. She said, call him Donald. No, that's not right. So let's call him Bob and say, Bob, you know, I feel that I am doing the best that I can here. And I feel like there's something I must not be doing well because you keep making comments about this and about that. And I really value your opinion. So I'd like to understand from you, what could I do to do a much better job? Because you've been here a while, you've been really successful, and I would really like to learn from you and get your color, your feedback, because I think I'm missing something. Because you did this, you said that, so I clearly am missing something here. Give Bob an opportunity to speak, because Bob may be bringing you real good feedback,
okay.
Or he may be full of beep, but if he's full of beep, now he's being a bully. And the easiest way to get a bully to step down is to say, I see you. So when you take him in that conference room, Bob's like, uh-oh, I've been uncovered now, and he will never do it again.
Ooh.
Oh, great advice.
Love.
Brilliant answer. Love it.
Hi, thanks for the panel. It's been great. I'm Laura Gonsalves from Ocean Spray, and I wanted to go back to the fear and fatigue comment that we sort of discussed. And balancing that when you're in sort of more of a mid-level management position where you might not have the ability to carve out those 2 hours, especially in cultures where meetings are a constant block on your calendar and you're always on, what are the strategies you guys would have for sort of more of us mid-level individuals with trying to find that time and trying to balance it for ourselves and then kind of the people that we manage?
Yeah, honestly, my response to that is I think that you do have the time. You have the power. And it's very easy to, and I totally hear you, to get sucked into everybody wants you to go to a meeting. Your whole calendar can get blocked out. But I am as intentional about the hour or 2 hours that I carve out of my day for that exercise, the yoga, the me time, the thinking time. And you have to do it. Because otherwise you can get completely spread to the four corners. And I don't mean this sort of glibly, but it will be in your head that you can't do it. Mm-hmm. You unequivocally have the power. And what's the worst thing that's going to happen? And when you follow that continuum, you realize that putting yourself first is the best thing that can happen.
May I go next?
We'll let you
go. Thank you.
Then we're going to go to the other mic with Shai.
Yeah.
Didn't know back there. Go ahead.
Yeah. So last year I went to a leadership conference and they were talking about the value of mentorship, but more than that, the value of finding a powerful sponsor. So I was wondering if any of you have been through that experience of having a sponsor who believes in you, pushes you, motivates you in your professional path.
I did not. There were very few women, and when I was coming up in the business, it was extremely competitive, and there was usually, if you know, there was one seat at the table for a girl. And fortunately, I finally got to that table. But I will say something interesting. I learned almost as much from having a very tough female boss as I did from having good male bosses. I had a very difficult, and she said, you know, you're going to learn everything from me.
Thanks.
Well, I can tell you, I learned more not to do than to do from her. But
that's
but
helpful.
Very helpful. And so inadvertently, she was extremely helpful. Not in the way I had anticipated, but she was very tough. She gave me very strong parameters as to what she expected from me. She was very outspoken, very articulate, and she was mean as hell. But I learned a lot, and I learned a lot about what I wanted, who I wanted to be in relation to her. So that was my experience, but that was, again, relative to my own business.
All right, we'll go real quick with the next question, only because the time is upon us. Right there.
Hi. Thank you so much for sharing your experiences. My name is Samira Bustillo. I work at State Street. And I just thought that, you know, when you take on more responsibilities and you keep doing more and more with confidence, so what you mentioned, sometimes you have to say no, but I wanted to hear like an example that you can tell us how we say no properly, and you can give us an example of a situation that you face in your experiences.
Mm-hmm. Jen, you want
to? No, I'm
okay. Well, the first thing is, you're right. It is about how you say no. So when somebody brings you that thing that you know is really going to be the breaking point, then you say to them, and again, let's call her Mary this time. Mary, I would love to work on this project, but I have A, B, C, and D. So why don't we go over to Ray, who gave me the last project, who said he needed that tomorrow, and let's figure out how to prioritize it. I'm happy to do it, but I want to make sure I do a good job, and I know I don't have capacity. So I need to kind of figure out where the capacity is. So let's get together and figure out what the priority is. Now you're bringing everybody in. And if Mary is junior to Ray, she's not going to touch it. She's going to say, oh, no, I'll get somebody else to do that. And say, well, please come to me with the next thing, because I'd love to do it. But I want to make sure that I knock the cover off the ball. And I know I can't do this with the capacity that I have left with what I've been given to do. That's your script, right? So A, you said I want to do it. B, I want to work for you. C, I want to do an outstanding job. And I have other things that are here. Not that you are less, but help me figure out how to prioritize with the things that I have with the people who have already given them to me. Okay. We're going to take two more questions, so I'm going to go to the back mic and then come back here. And for the rest of you, maybe you can meet up with the speakers at some point and ask your question just to be mindful of the time. Right, Marlies? Okay. Next question.
Hi, my name's Cherie, and I'm from Dell. Thank you so much for all the advice you've given on the panel. I kind of have a follow-up question to the sponsorship question about mentorship. How would you suggest that we would go about getting mentors?
I have two pieces of advice. One is be very clear, back to Carla's point about your driving your own agenda. What do you want to get out of the relationship? Because the worst thing you can do is say to someone, will you be my mentor? And really have nothing to follow up on in terms of what you want to work on. The second piece of advice I would have is assemble your own board of directors. Mm-hmm. Those are people in your life, not necessarily at work, who will unequivocally tell you the truth and give you honest feedback, because that can be incredibly valuable. So don't think of it as just a one-on-one. Assemble your own board, and you can start doing that. I started assembling my own board when I was 16, and they're still with me today.
Can I just say that, you know, the search for a mentor, I feel like that book, there was a book I grew up with, which was called Are You My Mother? I would go to everybody and look for somebody to be my mentor.
Right.
I never found a mentor.
Right.
It was so competitive, believe it or not, among all these editors and chiefs, no one would even tell you what the documents meant. And I finally just went up to somebody who was older than me, who was doing something, and I just said, I'm making you my mentor. You don't know it, but you're my mentor. I'm done with it. Check off. That was it. You can do it on your own without a mentor. I think we women are told they have to have this or they can't go forward. I don't think it's true.
Agree.
Anyway.
We'll take the next question.
Hello. Thank you so much. I'm Chelsea Larrabee from Fidelity Investments. So my question for you today is kind of around, you know, I'm a middle child. I'm a very balanced person. And I do realize to get to, you know, where you're sitting today, you have to make sacrifices. So can you talk a little bit about what those sacrifices might have been and, you know, if you're happy that you did them?
I didn't make any sacrifices. I compromised. And I knew, I think there's this ideal out there that you have to be Wonder Woman. And I think when you pare back the ideal and you focus on what's really important to you, then there are no sacrifices. There's just trade-offs.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is that it?
Stop.
I think that's it. So I would like to give them another huge round of applause.
Yeah. And good audience. Great audience.
And
you guys are awesome.
They will be in the exhibit hall signing their book. I have Carla's book and all the books right at my bedside table. I've read it. I studied. It's my manual. And I really encourage all of you to go to the books, the exhibit hall, and grab a book. Thank you so much for spending today with us. Thank you. Do you have a photo of all of us? We're going to take a picture.